Welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo. Over the past 4 years, D.C. Public Schools has been touting a reduced suspension rate and instead says it's using a more progressive approach to discipline known as restorative justice. But a recent Washington Post article calls the lower rates into question. While DCPS says suspensions dropped by 40% over a two-year period, the Post found that students in as many as 7 high schools were barred from school but not marked on official records as being suspended. Joining us to address that investigation and the district's approach to discipline is Antoine Wilson, the chancellor of DC Public Schools. It's good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
You can also join the conversation. What questions do you have for Chancellor Wilson? Do you believe there's widespread problem at DCPS of falsified suspension numbers? You can give us a call at 1-800-433-8850. Send us an email to kojo@wamu.org or send us a tweet to @kojoshow. Chancellor Wilson, as part of its investigation, the Washington Post requested public records from the city's 15 high schools and received information from 7 of those. The records showed that in January of 2016, students spent a total of 406 days in suspension, but administrators only recorded 15% of those days. The investigation seems to point to widespread falsification of suspension numbers at DCPS. Many teachers and education advocates say they alerted the district of the problem repeatedly, but nothing changed. So let's just start to see if you were aware of the problem and were you actively doing anything to fix it?
Well, what I would say is that it's extremely important for us in DCPS that our students are in school. And although I've joined the district in February of this year, it has actually been the policy of the district to admit students into classroom and use suspensions as only as a last resort in matters of student safety for some time. What we want to make sure that we do is we get accurate information as to what is happening. I have asked, as I have done in other places I've been, for an audit and assessment of what our practices are, and we'll use that information to make decisions as about what is and is not happening as relates to our disciplinary practices. I can go from what I've seen, though, and what I've seen as I've visited schools, as I've heard from students and parents, teachers and school leaders about the improvements that have happened in their school around school culture, particularly appreciating the role that restorative practices have played. And then, you know, I will say when these types of stories come up, it does help us recognize that there are some issues that need to be addressed. I look forward to getting an accurate accounting of where the issues are so that we can make improvements.
So we are going to get a little more in depth later in the conversation about restorative justice and those practices. But have you seen the reports that have come in? We have one from 2010 with the D.C. Office of the State Superintendent, which oversees compliance with special ed law, that alleges some of these informal suspensions. There were more complaints registered in 2012 and 2013 with that organization, the OSSE. Have you reviewed those since this Post article came out?
Well, the Post article that you're referring to that came out this morning. So, no, I've not seen those in 2010 and 2012, several years ago. I mean, I think what I will do, considering that I am looking at the role that I need to play in terms of moving forward, what I will do is I will look at what happened in the past, but I'm going to focus on trying to get accurate information as to what has happened over the last 3 years here in the district, and then use that information to improve. And I will also, while I'm doing that, appreciate the examples of success that I do see, and I've seen several as well. And we have to do both. We have to make sure that we are addressing any inappropriate actions or unintended consequences, if they are unintended, and then also appreciate real improvement. And I think that there's a lot of that as well.
Do you think there's a system-wide problem of inaccurate reporting of suspension rates, or do you believe that it's limited to specific schools?
Well, I need to actually get an accurate accounting before I say that we have a system-wide problem. I will say that I have no doubt that there are practices that need to get better. I mean, anytime you see, as you see in this in the reports, that there are students who are counted as present who are in fact out of school, or students who are on a list who never make it to school that day, then, you know, that's a concern. That's a problem. And for me, the bigger issue is around, you know, what we need to happen for students. If students are not in school, then they're not in a position to learn. We also want to make sure that if our schools are needing additional supports on how to maintain safety while also supporting students being in school, then we have to assess our support for our schools. And so for me, it's hard for me to come in and just say it's one thing or the other. Clearly, we have things that can get better. Clearly, also, there are schools that have done a great job, and we need to improve the places that need to get better because it means better service and support for the students. And then the places that are making a difference, then we want to continue to highlight those areas as well. So we have to do both.
DCP has stated publicly that there was a 40% drop in suspensions between the school year starting in 2013 and the school year starting in 2015. Given all of the uncertainty about what actually was recorded as a suspension, do you stand by that 40% figure?
I believe that until I get something more detailed, I don't see any reason why I should not appreciate the improvements the district has made. And then also go in and where there are efforts that where we need to get better to focus on that. I mean, you know, I think that what this article has done, or this series of articles have done, is it's highlighted examples where we need to look to improve. So we have three schools this past year that we have information that at least we know that at worst case scenario, they there are real issues with data entry. And that if not worst case scenario, in terms of knowing that there's an issue, that we have an issue with accurate recording of data. What leads to that, I need to look into. My first inclination is not to attach sinister motives to it. Having been a school principal, a lot of times it is a matter of systems that need to be put in place, improvements that need to be made. I need to understand exactly where the challenges are, and then we'll work to improve them. One thing I can assure is that we aren't going to support practices where students are held outside of class and they're supposed to be in class. We're not going to support do not admit lists where students are supposed to be counted present and they are held out of class. That's just not something that we need to do, and we'll work with our schools to ensure that's not happening.
Since you brought that up, I'd like to take a call from Nicole in Washington, D.C. Nicole, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks. My name is Nicole Duchinda, and I was recently a fellow clinical instructor and supervising attorney at the University of District of Columbia's Juvenile and Special Education Law Clinic. So, and my team of law students and myself, we were trying to investigate this do not admit list because we had understood that these lists had been used to suspend students at schools like Dunbar. My question to you is, what can you do to address the culture of secrecy and retaliation that surrounds the practice of using do not admit lists? Because whenever I asked school security guards and teachers about do not admit lists, I was met with people telling me that they existed, but they were afraid of retaliation from their student from their supervisors, and they were and when I made official written requests for records of do not admit lists, I was met with silence. What can you do to address that culture?
Well, you know, I think the first thing that we can do is make sure that we, you know, engage in some direct training and communication with our staffs, with our teams, our security, our school leaders, to make sure what we will and will not accept. I mean, I think that that has to be done. It has to be in writing, and it has to be ongoing. I think that's the first thing. Two, I think that we need to make sure that our district has really consistent practices throughout the system, so people understand what the discipline matrix is, and so when there are consequences, what should happen, how should it work, and then that creates an opportunity for accountability on the part of the public. And then as it relates to recording, we need to have one accurate system as to where we are recording suspensions, and then create structures to where there's a internal team within the school that's able to review that data, and then also to the district. I'd like to also encourage our school leadership teams and our community advisory committees, which are the LSAT teams, to also play a role in that. And I also think that there has to be some look in terms of community engagement. The other districts I've been in where we've been able to do this, in some of the schools that I know that are making a difference, there it's collaboration with the community. So this is not something that is done absent engagement from a number of stakeholders. And doing that, you can make a difference. You know, I think the larger issue, as long as we're focusing on just suspensions, it lends itself to a number of different issues. I mean, I think about the bigger practice as to how school is run, what type of environment we have in the school, what type of relationships we want to encourage between students and students, students and adults related to school culture, which is one of the reasons why emphasizing social-emotional learning is so important to me. Creating places where people understand that doing things in the best interest of young people is the way we want to behave, and that integrity, being a value that we have in the district, is something that we must hold ourselves to. And when people feel that there are things that are wrong, that we have clear ways in which they can share that information and have it followed up.
Nicole, thanks very much for your call. As a reminder, if you want to join the conversation, if you have questions for Chancellor Wilson, or if you have thoughts about how schools should handle student misbehavior, you can give us a call at 1-800-433-8850. Chancellor Wilson, in the time since the Post article was published, you said that DCPS plans to conduct an audit to look further into the issue of suspension numbers. What would that audit look like specifically, and when might the public expect to see it?
Well, what we will do is we will just have work with getting an independent audit where we bring in some folks, and they'll look at our data, and then they'll tell me what they found in terms of our practices, and then from there we will use it to improve. I mean, that will take some time. I mean, it takes real time and real analysis, and you know, we want to make sure that we're working with folks who actually have the capacity to do this well. And in the meantime, you know, we will begin to work with our school leaders and our instructional superintendents to make sure that our practices are clearly communicated throughout the district, and then also that those schools have really good systems in writing, practices in writing, policies in writing for their parents, and then we create structures for our parents to know what to do if they should find that the school isn't adhering to the policies that we've laid out. The timeline depends upon on you know, the contract and what we're able to get done in terms of the analysis. So it's hard for me to say how long it'll take. I do expect us to have a discipline matrix before the end of this year, and want to stress very strongly that this is something that I shared coming into the system with the deputy mayor, not knowing anything about the past practices, that we would go through, do an analysis, have a common discipline matrix, that restorative practices would be embedded in there, and we would have a means of reporting data out to the public regularly. So this does lead us to take this additional step to make sure that we are looking at an accurate set of data, but it is work that I focus my career on as a part of trying to make sure kids are in school and graduated, and some will do here.
Will DCPS hold administrators accountable who were found to have intentionally falsified suspension numbers?
Well, we will engage in the analysis, and if we should find that people intentionally falsified suspension numbers, then we'll address it. I don't know that that is what we'll find. If that is what we find, we'll address it. But I'm not prepared to say that is what we will find that, and I'm not seeing evidence of that to date.
There's a push to decrease suspensions, not only locally, but nationally. Many education experts see suspensions as doing more harm than good. They further alienate students who are already having trouble, may lead them down a path toward the juvenile justice system. What's your stance on suspensions more broadly, and when, if ever, do you think they're the right disciplinary tool to use?
Well, I think, you know, again, I think having the conversation specifically about suspensions misses a lot of what we're trying to get done in schools nationally. What we're trying to do is, first of all, make sure that our schools are safe places for students to learn. And in order for them to be safe places, then we need to make sure that we have order and that we have schools that are values-based and places where adults' responsibilities are clear and students' responsibilities are clear. And we have a means of teaching students what our expectations are. So that's the first thing. And as a byproduct of that, the most severe consequence that a school can give to a student is suspension. I believe the suspension should be used only in the rarest of occasions where you're dealing with safety issues in the matter of keeping a student safe, whether protecting a student from himself or protecting other students from a particular student or group of students, which means that if you're going to do that, you need to have a lot of professional development, a lot of systems and protocols in place, and a really strong emphasis on culture so that you're able to create an environment where adults are in such relationship with students and students with adults so that you're able to prevent as many disciplinary problems from happening as possible. And then finally, you got to have the right level of engagement with the community. There are so many supports that schools can utilize to prevent suspensions and disciplinary problems, but a lot of times that's going to be in partnership with community-based organizations, and we as a system want to make sure that we're doing a great job partnering.
Let's take a call from Laura in Washington, D.C. Laura, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and I have a question for Chancellor Wilson. I'm wondering if you're familiar with Ross Green's model of collaborative problem solving and the conversations, and if so, if it's being used in any schools in D.C. right now?
I am familiar. What I can't say is if I am aware of specific schools that are using the particular model. I will say in terms of when I refer to restorative practices versus just restorative justice, which is a really strong program as well, it is to include a menu of approaches, this being one, that focuses on first prevention and student and adult, positive student-adult interaction, problem-solving, and then also then repair, that when there is an incident that we're actually focused on repair. So the consequence is going to be something that comes out of a conversation focused on repairing harm and helping ensure accountability. But specific examples in the district on that particular practice, I am not aware.
We've been discussing disciplinary responses to student misbehavior. What's DCPS doing to intervene and help students before there's cause for punishment?
Well, what I would say is that the district has focused on in several of our schools, there's been a school climate initiative. And what that has involved is it involved bringing our educators together and really trying to think about what would it look like to create a positive school culture and create positive interactions with adults and students before issues arise. And so it looks at physical environment, looks at the ways in which we communicate with students, the way in which we teach our rules and consequences to students. You see restorative justice and other similar practices come into bear where students may start the day in circles or have advisories or when there's a conflict, engage in restorative conversations or restorative circles. So there are a number of practices that are in play. I think that the other thing that the district did going back several years is the district began to implement a structure to actually record systems when the prior student information system didn't capture all the information. And so one of the things that we are in the process of doing, in addition to all the things I just mentioned, is making sure that our schools have really good feedback, good information on how to appropriately embed social-emotional learning practices, other restorative practices, and then also how do we streamline the input of information. All of that is important as we get better at that. We expect to see improved feedback from our students, our parents, and our teachers.
Let's take another call from Jordan in Silver Spring. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good. Yeah, I guess it's good afternoon now, Chancellor. I'm a teacher now, and I was just curious how you feel talking with my coworkers that seeing hands get tied about disciplinary action in the schools, that we're almost a society that compels an education without valuing it. Like, we don't see a lot of support from parents and communities. I was just wondering how you felt about community outreach and really trying to get parents involved to, instead of artificially deflating suspensions and disciplinary rates, but getting parents involved in that too.
Jordan, thanks for your call. That's a huge question. We've just got about a minute left, so I'll ask you to keep it a little on the short side.
Yeah, what I would say is that I just agree with the caller that it's extremely important that we take a collaborative approach and understand that everyone has a role to play. Students have to come to school and they have to behave. Teachers have a responsibility to make connections with students. School leaders have a responsibility to support teachers in that endeavor. And then parents have to be partners with the teachers so that the student understands that the communication is coming from school to teacher, and we're not relying on students to relay information as to how things are going. Not to say students aren't a party. They are a party, but they can't be the primary way in which we're communicating with our families. We have to do it directly.
Nationwide, there are stark racial disparities in how schools discipline students. The U.S. Department of Education released data last year that revealed that black students were four times as likely to be suspended than white students. In D.C., that disparity is even larger. A January report from the Office of the State Superintendent of Education found that in the 2015 to 2016 school year, black students were seven times more likely to be suspended than white students. What do you see as the cause of that racial discipline gap?
Well, I think there are several things. I mean, I think that one is we need to make sure that we address implicit bias that exists in throughout our system in terms of how many people look at African-American students. And that's something that's sometimes very difficult for people to recognize. But bias certainly exists throughout our society, and some of them are things that are that we're acting upon that we're not aware of. We need to bring that to the forefront. Another thing that we need to do is we need to make sure that we're not criminalizing natural behaviors that speak to types of things we expect to see any adult, young adult do. And we can't criminalize that. And then finally, I think that we need to make sure that we're teaching replacement behaviors to adults who are used to over-suspending, and then also addressing real trauma that many young people experience in their lives and teaching them appropriate outlets for addressing any challenges that they have and emotional responses that they have to that trauma.
Antoine Wilson, Chancellor of the D.C. Public Schools, thanks very much for joining us for this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's an important conversation.
WAMU education coverage is supported in part by American Graduate. Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more conversation after that. Stay tuned.